classes of intelligent persons. Intelligence is that item that allows the living being to fulfill their desires, to decide how to execute my plans and fulfill my wishes. So Prabhupada's pointing out that there's two types of intelligent people. One is the person who uses their intelligence to simply figure out, and maybe very nicely figure out, how to fulfill their material desires. So we see in the world so much activity going on, construction and expansion and so-called advancement. And it takes a lot of intelligence. Going to school for so much education, you know, a lot of intelligence goes into all this material advancement. Later, Krishna will say that people with such intelligence, though, are considered mayaya paritta jnana, that their knowledge is being stolen by illusion. Anyway, so in this purport, Prabhupada says there's two types of intelligent people, the materialistic intelligence, and then those whose intelligence is used to understand what's the real purpose of my senses, mind, and intelligence. So they will not be using their intelligence to figure out how to fulfill their material desires. They'll be using their intelligence to figure out, how can I go beyond the senses, understand the real self? So this verse points out that when a materialistic person is feeling enlivened, when they're feeling inspired, that is considered their day. Day means when the sun is shining and one is, you know, doing their activities. So a materialistic person, when do they consider it to be daytime? When their senses are able to contact sense objects. When there's material advancement. When there's creation of bigger and better, ever-expanding opportunities for sense gratification. Krishna says here, but for the introspective person, such opportunities for sense gratification doesn't enliven them. For the introspective person, when opportunities for sense gratification and hearing about material, you know, doings, prajalpa, when that comes their way, they just refrain. They go into what the materialists would consider almost like a sleeping condition. They're not interested. Conversely, those activities that cause the introspective person to feel inspired, such as topics of self-realization, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita discussions, etc. Such activities cause an introspective person to become enlivened and inspired. But when a materialist comes across those very same things, they shut down. And to them, it's like nighttime. They just shut down. So Krishna is showing Arjuna the black and white, the day and night, 180 degrees difference between a materialist and a spiritualist. And he's basically asking Arjuna, wake up. Your senses can go one way or the other way. You can use your senses to fulfill your material desires, or you can use your senses for spiritual enlightenment, for my service, to work under my direction. And depending on which way you go, it'll be either day or night. So we all see this when we, if we go out and try to interact with the public. It's really amazing. You know, we go out on campus and try to introduce students to the Bhagavad Gita, and we say to them, oh, you know, here's Bhagavad Gita, this is an ancient text, you know, even older than Buddhism, from that culture that gave rise to things like yoga and meditation, and it deals with self-realization. And then we sometimes ask them, you know, is this something you've ever thought of before? Like, what is the real self beyond this temporary material body? And it's just amazing how many people say, oh, I'm not interested in that. Here's a book about self-realization. Oh, I'm not interested in that. No, thank you. Have you thought about these things before? No, I don't think about those things. According to Bhagavad Gita, if we're distributing knowledge of self-realization to people, they should be like really excited. Oh, wow, thank you. This is in my self-interest. But instead they're saying, no, thank you. I'm not interested. Sometimes they haven't the foggiest idea what Bhagavad Gita is. Have you heard of Bhagavad Gita before? No, I've never heard of it. Okay, this is the great classic of the East discussing self-realization. Oh, that's not for me. So they won't take a 800-page book home about self-realization and give a little donation. But they will go to the bookstore and spend many hundreds, up to $1,000 a semester for their textbooks. One student just now at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee yesterday told me that she spent $700 on textbooks for this semester. She said, yeah, and my roommate spent $1,000. You know, $250 for one book. You ask them to give a little donation for Bhagavad Gita. Oh, I'm not interested. So it is like night and day. And we know an animal or another creature which is like this. What creature do we know that they're got their eyes shut during the day and they have their eyes open at night? The owl. So the materialistic people are considered like owls. Their eyes are shut when the bright light of Krishna consciousness is, you know, Krishna is compared to the sun, right? And Maya is compared to darkness. So where there is the sun, there can be no darkness. So where there's Krishna, there can be no Maya, no nescience. So Krishna is like the sun, and when that sun is shining, the materialists keep their eyes closed. And when that sun is not shining, or doesn't appear to be shining, they have their eyes wide open. So Krishna is asking Arjuna to not be like that owl who is enlivened and inspired by material activities, but to use his senses like an introspective sage. And Krishna further explains that the introspective sage, it's not that they don't use their senses, but they use their senses like a tortoise does. A tortoise knows when to withdraw his limbs to stay aloof from what's going on out there. You've seen a tortoise? The way they bring their limbs in, and when you walk by, you would think it's a stone. You know, like a, looks like a stone on the ground, like dead matter. But he's actually hiding in his shell. But when it's the right time, then his limbs come out and he walks around. So this inability of people to understand what their real self is, what their real self-interest is, can only be dispelled. This ignorance can only be dispelled by transcendental knowledge. So, jumping a little ahead, at the end of the third chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna that one should know the senses to be superior to dull matter. And then superior to the senses is the mind. And then superior to the mind is the intelligence. And then superior to the intelligence is he, the soul. So depending on what level of existence or what level their consciousness is at, that determines where a person is enlivened. So persons who are totally engrossed in identifying with the gross body, then their pleasure, enlivenment, etc., comes only from that platform. And if you try to discuss with them on a higher level or bring them to a higher level, it's almost like you're trying to take a fish out of water. They're very uncomfortable. No, thank you. And likewise, somebody who's living their life on a higher level of consciousness, you try to talk to them, you know, and bring them to a level much lower, and they also feel very uncomfortable. They can't do that. You know, you've heard the expression, oh, you're such a drag, right? Oh, I don't like that person. They're such a drag. They really drag me down. Well, it's a fact. It's a fact. We're dragging people down every time we get into... That's why, like, we don't talk prajalpa, or at least we're not supposed to. Because what does prajalpa do? Prajalpa means unnecessary talk. Talk on the bodily platform of life. Such talk drags us down, drags our consciousness down to the materialistic platform. And whatever the sound vibration is, whatever level of existence sound vibration comes from, that's the level the consciousness is going to go to. So if we speak mundane sound vibrations, we hear mundane sound vibrations, guess where our consciousness is? Totally in matter. But if we speak and we hear transcendental sound vibrations, then guess what level of consciousness is going to be at? The consciousness follows the sound vibration. Therefore, Narada Muni, when he's speaking to Vyasadeva, at the end of his narrating his story of how he became Narada Muni, he tells Vyasadeva that he fully realized that the cure for all anxieties, the cure for all unhappiness and anxieties, is for people to be absorbed in the transcendental sound vibration. So that's Lord Chaitanya's movement, to contaminate the world with transcendental sound vibration. And simply by that sound vibration vibrating through the ether, people's consciousness actually becomes altered. Gradually. And when the consciousness becomes altered, then everything else falls into place. The more one's consciousness is uplifted, the naturally the activities of the senses are going to be uplifted. The senses will follow the mind, follow the consciousness. Of course, the senses can also pull the consciousness down. I guess those are the verses that are coming up next. I guess we're only supposed to do one verse, right? Okay, because the next verse is just so very nice. I really like this text 70 of the chapter 2. Apuryamana machala pratishtam samudram apa pavishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pavishanti sarve sashantim aprotina kama kami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna. So as long as one has the material body, demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna-conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he's like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the river that flow into the ocean, but he's steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruit of workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore, they are in perfect peace. So here Krishna speaks this verse following the night and day verse. To illustrate, well, what does that introspective sage look like? We say that those things that enliven a materialist are the things that put the transcendentalist basically to sleep and vice versa. So what is that? It's very clearly said here, the striving to satisfy material desires. One who strives to satisfy material desires is never peaceful. They're working very hard to satisfy such desires, but the transcendentalist, when they see all that going on, all this pursuit for sense gratification, they're not at all inclined. They just sit back like, I'm not interested. So to a materialist, an introspective person looks like they're mentally ill. And Prabhupada actually wrote a Back to Godhead magazine article before he came to America, when he started his magazine, called Who's Crazy? Who is crazy? The materialists point the finger, oh, those Hare Krishna people, they're crazy. They don't go to movies and restaurants and, you know, bars and whatever, discos, and they don't do any of this stuff. There's something wrong with them. They must be crazy. They spend all their time chanting and studying ancient scriptures. So Prabhupada said, who is crazy? And he compared it to an insane asylum, that if you walk into an insane asylum, what do you find there? Insane people. And so a sane person walks into the insane asylum and they all point the finger like, oh, that person's weird. They're really different. They must be crazy. When the actual fact is, the inmates are the ones that are crazy and the visitor is sane. So Prabhupada wrote that article then to say that everyone in the material world is actually crazy, because they're doing what this text 70 just said. They're like the rivers are coming into the ocean. If the ocean were to get all disturbed by all those rivers coming in, it would flood over, right? Go over its brinks and flood. So one who tries to satisfy desires, they're like that agitated body of water. But we know the ocean doesn't become agitated. Its natural state is that it's not agitated, no matter how much water comes pouring into it. So it was nice, Prabhupada said here, that one who's not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires, even though the desires are present, they're not disturbed. So it's not that desires aren't coming. You know, sometimes we get a little depressed, a little discouraged, that, oh, so many material desires are in my mind. I have so many material desires. But the point Prabhupada's making here is, well, don't act on them. Don't be disturbed by them. Just like there's so many waves going through this room right now, radio waves and internet signals and phone signals, and I mean, there's like so much electromagnetic vibrations going through this room, but we're not aware of them. But if you turn your, internet on and turn your phone on, then all of a sudden you pick up the signals and you start interacting with them. So it's like that. All these waves are coming in, but the introspective sage, he doesn't tune into them. He ignores, let them go by, let them go by, let them go by. So that's what the materialist is doing. The materialist is trying to grab on to every signal that comes in. Oh, here's a thought, here's a desire, here's a hankering. And they try to grab onto it and ride it out. You know, like in the ocean, you can go surfing on the waves. Every wave that comes in, the surfers are trying to catch it and ride it all the way to the beach. And then catch the next wave and ride it into the beach. So the materialists are like that. Every wave of desire that comes floating through their mind, they try to grasp onto it and ride it out for all that it's worth. And they consider that like enlivening, like daytime. But the introspective sage, all these waves of desires that are coming in, let them go by. I'm not going to ride it out. So the materialist is thinking, oh, look, they're just sitting on the beach not having any fun. But the introspective sage understands that's where your misery comes. Your misery comes from trying to ride out all these waves of desires. So at night, when the waves subside and the ocean is calm, the materialist goes home. There's nothing, no waves to ride out here. But the introspective sage, there's no waves of material desires going through my mind. My mind is peaceful. Now I can meditate on Krishna and chant attentively and engage in devotional service. He becomes very active in devotional service. So So a materialistic person actually wants to have a busy mind because that's all their life is composed of. But they see that it disturbs them in the sense that it brings them unhappiness, and that's why today yoga and meditation are so popular. Practically every student we talk to, you know, I know, like I ask them, have you ever tried any meditation? About 50% will say, yes, I've tried meditation, or I do meditation. And the other 50% will say, I haven't, but it's something I would like to get into. I think I could benefit from meditation. So this is what happens when one continually just rides those waves, rides those waves over and over again. It should bring them to the point of complete exhaustion and disappointment. And now they're hankering for a peaceful mind. Now they're starting to get some idea that maybe that's what the problem is here. Maybe that's what's wrong with this picture, is I shouldn't be riding out these waves. So that frustration is the first impetus to bring people to spiritual life. So if you find somebody who's saying, yes, I'm thinking meditation would be good for me, then you know they might be ready for Bhagavad Gita. They might be a candidate for becoming an introspective sage. So maybe we'll stop there, see if there's, leave 5 minutes for any kind of comments or Raktak Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. When you say, you say we still will have like desires, even though, and we can still be have peace of mind.
Yes. So Krishna's saying that
it won't have an effect on us.
Or? Right. Krishna's saying that if we don't pursue fulfilling the desires, then the mind will be peaceful. But if we pursue fulfilling the desires, that's when the mind becomes unpeaceful.
So as long as we have a body, these desires will keep sprouting up?
Mm-hmm. One time, one of Prabhupada's sannyasi disciples said to Prabhupada in kind of a alarmed way, he said to Prabhupada, I'm a sannyasi, but I'm recognizing that I have sex desire. So he was a little bit like embarrassed. And Prabhupada said, oh, as long as you have a material body, there will be sex desire. But you don't act on it. Don't meditate on it. Don't contemplate it. Just ignore it. You know, like so sometimes there'll be.
So when it arises, you, like a cloud comes and goes. So when it arises, you just let it pass.
Just let it pass. It's so, like the weather, it just passes by. Just let the storm go by.
You observe it in a detached manner?
Yeah. We understand, oh, that's just activities of the mind, but I'm not the mind. Higher than the mind, we mentioned, is the intelligence. Yeah. So the intelligence says, nope. Just like you might go grocery shopping with a little child, and the child says, I want that candy, I want those potato chips, I want that soda, I want this toy. And you say, nope, 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 nope. We're just buying some fruits and vegetables today, that's it. No candy, no soda, no popcorn, nothing. Nope, 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 nope. They'll keep demanding, they'll throw a temper tantrum right in the middle of the store and embarrass you. And you say, nope, nope, nope. And the more you say no, 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 sooner or later they're going to stop harassing you because they know that they can't win. So we might go years battling these material desires that are demanding that we fulfill them. But if we learn the art of ignoring them, then it's just a matter of time before they stop harassing us. Of course, we have to get a higher taste. We work on our Krishna conscious desires. The more we fill our heart with Krishna conscious desires, the more there's no room for material desires. But we have to do both. We have to ignore the material desires and fill the heart with Krishna conscious desires.
Thank you. That really clears it up for me. I have to keep hearing this over and over again.
Because it's easy to be discouraged. Yeah. Oh, my mind is filled with so many material desires. So what, Prabhu? That's not you.
But our intelligence is greater than our mind.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have to feed our mind every morning and every evening with hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Just to remind us of these basic ABC points. You know?
Thank you. That clears it up for me. Thank you.
Okay. We have a minute and a half left if anybody would like to add anything. Vaishnava Sevananda Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna Lataji. Thank you for the wonderful class. I was wondering if you have noticed any breakthroughs, like for preaching with the social media. You know, you got Twitter, Facebook, all these different things. Are devotees using any of these for preaching?
Yeah, that's a good point. Devotees are using social media for preaching, and I think it's going nicely. But unfortunately, there's about a zillion times more nonsense being preached on social media, and that's what people are really plugged into. So we have noticed a change in the youth today, the college students today. When we compare them to previous years, they seem to be increasingly less attentive because they're so accustomed to just staring at their device. You know, they have 10 minutes to go from class A to class B, and they're looking at their device the whole time, and they're plugged in with their earbuds. You try to say, excuse me, and they don't even pay attention. They just ignore you. So social media, fortunately, does have a lot of Krishna conscious stuff going on, but it is by far outnumbered by the non-Krishna conscious stuff, which is really degrading people's minds, unfortunately. Mass Harinam Sankirtan is probably the only solution for all of this. So unless we get out there with the ecstatic, visible Harinam Sankirtan, I don't expect things to change for the better very much. Okay, so now we will stop for the Gaura Arti. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Swami iti namine namaste Saraswate Deve Gaurabhani Pracharine Nirveshesha Sunyabhadi Pashyati Adeshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda